LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, get the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, Ayajani Matthew Vaughn of Bowling Green, Kentucky, with a discussion on the celebration of Lupercalia, an ancient Roman pagan festival of fertility and prosperity. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Ayajani. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone yet again to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, making Mondays a little bit more bearable for almost a year. And if it is Monday, you know it is Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. Take a moment, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page, drop your comment on the Magic Mondays post for your chance to win a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. Lots of great readers out there ready and waiting to assist you. So don't miss out every Monday on the Hoodoo Psychic's Facebook page. So, Monday announcements out of the way. Really excited for the show tonight. You know, a lot of really good things have been going on recently, and, you know, 2024 is just kind of rolling along and keeps getting, at least in my estimation so far, better and better. You know, lots of great things going on with Folk Conjure and Folk Faith Ministries. We'll get back into that in a minute, but first, I'm going to go back over to Reverend James. How are things with you, Reverend James?
Things are well. I'm kind of glad it's starting to warm up a little bit, at least during the day, even though it's still kind of cold at night. But other than that, those of you that are in the know that I've been working on a Lenormand deck, and it will be debuting very, very soon. I have two proof decks, and I've made sure that all of the kinks are ironed out. We've lined up a printer that can get things printed rather quickly, rather than the printer that we were working with before that would tell us that it was going to take 6 months, which was a little bit crazy. So we'll be able to bring
that.
We'll be able to bring this to everyone a little bit sooner. So keep an eye out for those pre-orders. And if you guys have found me on Instagram or on Facebook, then you've probably seen that I've been playing around with some AI art. So I don't know if anybody else has been doing that. You know, I'm not going to say that it's art or that it's not art, but I will say that it's rather therapeutic. So I encourage everyone to kind of try it out. You know, if you don't feel like you've ever been able to do anything creatively in that aspect, then this kind of gives you that ability to do that and to see what's in your mind in the physical world, which I think is really neat. Other than that, things are just kind of moving along. We're getting new candles. New candle molds are coming in very soon. So we're going to have a lot more new candles coming up. So if you haven't heard about it, go ahead and check out our Etsy store at folkconjure.etsy.com. Hey, Maganda's asking, am I using Midjourney? No, I'm using Bing. I'm using Google because Google has a Labs out. So if you sign up for their beta testing, you can get in on that. And I'm also using Night Cafe. I'll post some links.
Yeah, Reverend James is just a busy, busy guy coming up with all kinds of new and fantastic things. But like he alluded to, I'm excited for those of you that have watched the rollout of our hand-poured candles line on the Etsy page, soon to be on folkconjure.com. Really excited. I enjoy doing this so much, and a lot of care, love, and focus goes into making each and every one of these candles. I couldn't help myself, and I ordered a whole nother slew of candle molds that I will be making testers out of, and we'll be debuting those very soon too. Actually, and hopefully within the next week, we have some additional things coming up, some really cool little services that we're going to be adding to Folk Conjure and the Etsy store. Some things that can help you get along through your week, through your year, et cetera, et cetera. That's all the sneak peek I'm going to give on that. You're going to have to follow the Facebook pages and the Instagram pages to learn more when they're ready. All right, so all that aside, so thrilled for our guest today. We had a damn good show the last time he joined us with Crystals 101, and so much fantastic information that came through that, some really outstanding ways to use crystals in your practice, in your life. If you haven't heard the show, definitely jump back into the archive and take a listen. But welcome back, Ayajani Matthew Vaughn. How are things going with you, sir?
Fantastic. It is great to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, we enjoyed having you on the show last time. You know, I know things have been kind of picking up for you out up there in Kentucky, teaching some yoga, doing some classes, and a lot of... Why don't you share with our listeners some of the things that you've got irons in the fire.
Oh my gosh. So like you said, it's really picked off. I've been having a lot of fun. I've started with a new company for yoga. So I'm teaching multiple classes there and different types, you know, basic yoga, chair yoga. They asked me to do a movement and meditation class. So we are going to incorporate some yoga asana, just enough to kind of get the body into that kind of space where you can meditate easily. Because one of the mistakes a lot of people make is they think, well, when I'm upset, I should meditate. No, actually exercise or do something else to kind of burn off that energy, because meditation amplifies whatever you've got going on emotionally or mentally or energetically. So you don't want to meditate if you're not in a good space. So we're going to combine that and play with several different types of meditation. And I wanted to even incorporate a sound bath, but I don't know if that's going to happen yet.
So exciting. I know you've been sharing a lot of videos, little kind of demos and things for people to try and keep up with, you know, to kind of ease their way in. I may have been following some of those myself.
Good. Well, a lot of people are afraid.
Definitely.
Well, one, they don't want to come to a class by themselves. And like, promise, I won't bite. Nobody else will bite. It's okay to go to a yoga class by yourself. But two, they're afraid that, you know, the main thing I hear is, are you going to twist me into a pretzel? I'm not flexible. And it's not about that. It is not about, you know, doing anything extreme with your body. It's about getting to know your body better and what it's capable of that day. And every day is different.
You know, a lot of people do have misconceptions about yoga and such. I still find people that even conflate yoga with things like Tai Chi and Qigong. I'm like, no, separate things. But that's some really good advice, because, you know, a lot of, myself included, you know, I'm that guy who is a little bit afraid to go
hang on just a second, Reverend Art.
A yoga studio alone.
Hi, Johnny. I just need to ask real quick. Are you on speakerphone?
No, I don't think. Oh, wait a minute. I thought I turned it off. Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Much better. We were getting some feedback. I appreciate it. Thank you. Go ahead. Continue,
okay.
Reverend Art.
Thank you.
Was I just admitting to being afraid to go to yoga? I think that's where I was.
Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid. There's no reason to be afraid. Everybody there. Well, one of the first rules of yoga is, one, pay attention to what's going on your mat. It's not about a competition. And two, don't eat an hour before because you'll probably fart. Those are the only two rules you really need to remember before you go to a yoga class, because we're twisting the body, massaging the internal organs, hopefully, and, you know, that just moves gas and things around. So don't do that. But otherwise, come, have fun. And there's a yoga for everybody. So try a couple of different classes.
That's good advice, you know, because I think that's one of the things that I know we're not here for yoga tonight, but, you know, it is something that a lot of people would like to try. I've seen
mm-hmm.
its therapeutic benefits, especially for those that, you know, may have those range of motion issues and things like that,
mm-hmm.
where that's where chair yoga comes in, you know,
the
people that,
yoga.
You know, they may have balance issues, you know, you can start, you know, doing from the chair position, you know, using
mm-hmm.
the chair as a tool, using a chair to support, and I've really seen benefits. But, you know, what kind of advice do you have for, you know, when they're kind of scoping out a yoga program?
I would not go to anything that looks super trendy, because that's kind of a problem in yoga. Everybody wants it to look Instagram ready, and they're marketing it to be like, yes, if you come to my class, you're going to be like this Instagram model, and it's gorgeous, and we all wear our expensive clothing. Just go to like a nice little community yoga. Start there. There's plenty of it out there in gyms, in community centers. Just find the group of people that make you feel comfortable. And especially for this audience, because I'm assuming you probably have quite a few magic workers, yoga is amazing for that, because it increases your ability to channel energy. And I sneak a lot of magic into my yoga class anyway. Like, I have them all meditating with Shiva Lingams, which balances your masculine and feminine energies. And the ones who I know that practice, like, energy work of some kind, Reiki, pranic healing, whatnot, One of the things that I've been working with is holding an energy ball while you practice, because if you're paying attention to the flow of energy as it moves through your body, it'll tell you what adjustments you need to make. Because where it's not flowing is where you need to breathe into and maybe make a micro adjustment to fix. It's all about just following the energy. It's so much fun.
Very cool. So I think unequivocally, if anyone is in the Bowling Green, Kentucky area, definitely check out it's For Yoga. If I remember right, the website's foryoga.me, correct?
I think so. Or.com. I always go through it through Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, you can find it there too. But I'm pretty sure it's the only For Yoga in Bowling Green. So you'll find it easy. Don't worry.
And it's the number 4 yoga, not F-O-R.
Yes.
It's the number 4 yoga.
Yes, the number 4
I may
yoga.
Have been scoping mm-hmm. that out too.
Okay.
No, I'm personally very much intrigued by yoga. It's something, you know, I injured my back very young in life. I was 19 years old working in a receiving dock at the time, and I injured my back.
Oh, no.
A lot of painful years after that, you know, and honestly, allopathic medicine kind of left me high and dry. I was tired of the narcotic pills that they kept trying to push at me, and there were only so many shots in the ass I was willing to take. You know, chiropractic changed my life, and I've really been looking to supplement that as with something that is holistic and appropriate. So I think you've inspired me to really dive in and take a look at the yoga side of life.
I hope so. Tell me how it goes. And like I said, try a couple of different classes, find the teacher who you really resonate with.
Actually, can I get your opinion? And I'm sure our listeners would be wondering this as well. What about YouTube, you know, watching YouTube videos and things of that nature? Or I know, is it Gayam makes some very prominent yoga videos. What about utilizing tools like those?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, wherever you need to start there. My niece, who's a yoga instructor now, would not go to an actual class the first 2 years that she practiced. I gave her some old videotapes that I had learned from, and then she finally felt comfortable enough to go to a class, and now she's teaching. So whatever avenue you need to take to get into it, perfect. The only thing about recording is that the teacher can't watch you and make adjustments, because a lot of people will feel or get into a pose and they think that's correct, but it's not necessarily. So a teacher's going to, you know, watch you and be like, make this little adjustment to protect, you know, your back or your arm or your knees or whatever, where you won't have that as if you watch a recording.
You know, I honestly never thought of that. That is a very excellent point. So, you know, it's when practicing without a teacher, it's be aware. That's very that's a very poignant point. I'm really glad you brought that up. In the chat, Troll T shared, always look on the yoga side of life. And now I have that song in my head. Always look on the yoga side of life. I'm going to be singing that for the rest of the day. Thank you, Nagashima. And now that I've embarrassed myself singing, right?
Now that I've embarrassed myself
singing on tonight's show, I think this is going to be a good spot. We're going to jump into our announcements, get a little bit of good, really good info, and we're going to come back and dive into Lupercalia.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LaFay in syndication Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield in syndication Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Thursdays 4 to 5. All times Pacific at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, January 30th on the Crystal Silence League and Syndication will be the topic of The Astral Tower, Part 3. Tuesday, February 6th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LaFay will be the topic of The Importance of Intention. And Wednesday, February 7th on the Now You Know Show in syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of The Song of Solomon and Solomon's Seal Root. And Thursday, February 9th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deborah Voigt will be on the topic of The Spirit of Water and Transformation. And next Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man will be Mama E bringing the topic of Finding Real Love. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located on readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located on .org. Thank you to all of our sponsors, and back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And the moment we've all been waiting for, jumping into our topic for tonight, Lupercalia. You know, Ayajani and Reverend James and I were talking a little bit before the show, and kind of remarking a little bit about how they're, Lupercalia is, it's not really an extremely well-known festival that's within the pagan heritage. We both actually kind of, learned a little bit about it from, of all places, pop culture. You know, we did that show with Papa G about pop magic and pop culture. There's a little bit of truth in most of the fiction that's out there, quote unquote. But the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina that was remade recently, definitely that was the first time I had heard of Lupercalia. I'm going to let you take it away, Ayajani. Enlighten us.
Honestly, me too. That was how I was introduced to it as well. So I don't study a specific tradition. I'm very eclectic, so I pull from whatever sources feel right, that kind of speak to my spirit. And so I saw that episode, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then I Googled it, and I was like, wow, it just really rung something within me. So I was like, I kind of want to dive a little bit deeper into it. And I think this was about 3 years ago that I first started looking into it. And so basically, if you don't have an established tradition like myself, you do want to find the things that really resonate with you. And so Imbolc wasn't one that I ever got excited about. I mean, it's a wonderful holiday and all my friends celebrate it, but it's not one that really spoke to me. So I was like, well, I want something that feels natural and kind of goes with my natural rhythms, because like the solstices and the equinoxes, I feel those. I feel those in my spirit. I feel those in my body. I understand energetically the changes happening. But Imbolc didn't do that for me. And so when I looked into Lupercalia, which is February the 15th, I was like, that really coincides with my energy at that time. For me, like starting in November, like listening to my natural cycles, starting in November is when my body goes into hibernation. And, disclaimer, I am not a medical professional in any way. I'm not trying to cure or diagnose anything, but I personally get seasonal affective disorder, and so I started taking D3, and it's been really helpful. But I noticed during that time period, through November until about the middle of February, my energy was gone. I didn't want to do anything. And so when I kind of paired that, okay, I come to life at the same time this festival is going on, I'm like, there's something to that. And so the day, February 15th, is the day that it's celebrated, but some other sources say that it starts on the 13th and goes through the 15th. And I'm like, well, why not it? Have a party and celebrate for 3 days instead of just one. That just makes sense to me.
Right.
But basically, Lupercalia is a pastoral festival in ancient Rome. It's observed annually, like on the days that I said. And the purpose was to purify the city and promote health and fertility. And I thought that really aligns with what's happening in my body and in my spirit, like letting go, purging all the things that kind of built up in those slow, wintry, cold months, and then having this burst of, like, life energy because spring is coming, and, you know, you start wanting to do things again, and you start, you know, feeling your oats and really wanting to move, and you really start focusing on, okay, it's spring. What energies, you know, do I want to focus on in the coming year? Like, how do I want to framework my year? And so Lupercalia for me just does all those things. So I personally kind of split it up into the 13th is the purge day. So, and I like to start on February 1st. Basically, take the 1st and you want to be done by the 13th. Declutter your house. Do spiritual cleansings. Make sure you reset all your wards. Like, this is your time to, like, really get your ducks in order. Like, clear out anything that's not serving you so you have this fresh life that can bubble up underneath. And going back to, like, Lupercalia, it's they had their own priesthood. Like, I love, like, just the imagery and the legend and just the power behind it. So they had their own priesthood, and it was called the Luper. Well, I pronounce it Luperci, but I've heard it pronounced Luperci, and basically it's the Brotherhood of the Wolf. It was men aged from 20 to 40, and what they would do is at the Lupercal altar, they'd sacrifice a male goat and sometimes a dog, and what they would do is sacrifice the animal and then rub the blood on two of the chosen priests. And then they would take wool, soak it in milk, and then wipe away the blood. And so you've got the red of passion, purification, life, basically, and then cleansing all that with the purity of the white of the milk. And they would, of course, use the animals that they sacrifice and create a huge feast. That's why they would be feasting on the 13th and the 14th. And when the priests were basically anointed, they were expected to laugh because they were bringing, you know, joy back into the lives. You're celebrating everyone who had survived winter, we're having a new year, just laugh, be excited about living again. And so they kind of split off. Some would run counterclockwise around the Palatine Hill. And basically, in the legend, that's where the she-wolf took Romulus and Remus and breastfed them and cared for them until they were adopted by a shepherd and his wife. And the others would run through the city, and they'd have these whips, these thongs that they made from the skin of the sacrificed animals. And it was for purification and fertility. People would gather in the streets, and women who wanted to become pregnant during this time, you know, they'd have their hands out so the half-naked priest or fully naked priest could run by with their hands as a blessing for a healthy and easy childbirth. It was just a huge party. Everybody was thankful to be alive, and it was just something about that super excites me. I don't know if maybe it was a past life, maybe I did this, but I just love this story. And so what else? It was, and it just ended in a huge party. And, of course, there was lots of drinking and lots of coupling. One of the stories that I read is what they would do is have like a marriage or coupling lottery. And so people would get paired together, and if they really enjoyed each other through the festival, they would continue their relationship on, maybe get actually married later. So,
precursor to speed dating.
It does very much sound like that.
This is actually a very interesting kind of a festival to me. You know, I'm listening along to how you've described this, you know, especially with the cyclical nature of the energy, you know, winter comes, you're just, and it really does start to peak, you know, that, and then you're building towards that mid-February-ish kind of a burst. Feels very much in tune, honestly, with the Aquarian energy of the time too, you know, that the exuberance and the celebration. Very interesting, very interesting. And so you said this is something that's celebrated annually. I think you picked up what I was putting down. Is this something that still goes on, like even in modern times?
From what I saw, it's not widespread, but yeah, you know, pockets all over Europe probably do, and obviously here. I mean, like the ancient things are coming back. What people resonate with, they, you know, will rename or rebrand, but the energy is always there. The energy is the same. It cycles. And so it might get a facelift, but the core meaning is always there, if that makes sense.
Definitely. You know, and over the course of time, you know, a lot of things do, you know, wax and wane and fade in, fade out, and fade back in. In your research at all, had you been able to find out, like, when had this kind of started to fade? Did you find any references to that?
I didn't, actually. Oh,
a lot of examples.
Let me say
modernization.
This, though. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, a lot of people call Lupercalia the pagan Valentine's, and so it's not that. It wasn't, or at least a lot of the sources that I saw said it wasn't a situation where Christianity kind of, you know, rebranded and changed it. The St. Valentine's story is really bloody and really weird. The whole love aspect of the Valentine's story came in from a poet. So, yeah, it didn't have anything to do with that like you would kind of expect, because that happens so often with other pagan holidays.
I was kind of wondering if it was very much like that, you know, where it was subsumed by the predominant, I don't know, religion power that be at the time. In trying to research it more myself, you know, it really does kind of fade into obscurity a little bit. But it seems like it is, because I've caught some references in, you know, several different covens are, you know, bringing it back in different parts of the U.S. and in the U.K. And I did catch that, you know, a lot of references saying it's the precursor to Valentine's Day and such. And, you know, it's really kind of, it's important to draw that discernment that it is not the precursor to Valentine's Day. It is not the, you know, Valentine's Day's ancestor. It's a standalone festival.
It is. It really is. And enjoy it for what it is. Just real quick in my research, I did have this note. In France and England in the Middle Ages, it was generally believed February 14th marked the beginning of the mating season of birds. This is where the romance comes in. This contributed to the belief that the day was a day of love. In his 1375 poem, Parliament of Fowls, Chaucer was the first to mention St. Valentine as a day of love. So Geoffrey Chaucer basically kind of grafted on the whole romantic ideal of St. Valentine's Day around 1375. It wasn't that originally.
And Hallmark owes him a debt of gratitude.
I guess so.
There are a few questions in the chat. Troll T asks, who was Lupercalia celebrated by last? What group of people, if you know?
That's a great question. Let me look here real quick. I didn't see anything specifically stating that. It might have been one of those situations where it just kind of gradually faded out. Let's see. In the late 5th century AD, Pope Gallius I eliminated the pagan celebration of Lupercalia and declared February 14th to be to celebrate the martyrdom of St. Valentine. So I guess around that time period, but I don't know who he was over.
Okay. And Phyllis asks, she says that her child loves to talk to her while she's listening. But if
oh yay,
do you happen to know?
We forgive you.
What kind of things like food, flowers, or herbs, etc., are associated with Lupercalia? Anything
oh, yeah.
specific?
Oh yeah, we can.
We had talked about the few sacrifices, possibly the dog or the. I was actually kind of curious
mm-hmm.
about this myself. Is you know what are the hallmarks of celebrating Lupercalia? Are there traditional foods, traditional drinks, things of that nature?
Well, during the celebration, an offering was made by the Vestal Virgins of salted meal cakes. So that was one of the meals that they had along with the goats. In the legend, when Romulus and Remus were put into the river to save their lives by the servant because their mother had broken her vow of celibacy, and so the children were going to be put to death. So the servant took them to the river and put them in a basket and sent them down. They were the basket got caught in the roots of a fig tree, and this is where Lupa, the she-wolf, found them and took them in. So that's the only herb that I have associated with them from the story. But let me go over here to my list. Herbs that I would incorporate, like this is what I will personally incorporate into my celebration. And like I said, I broke it down into purge, passion, and praise. So the first one is bay, a masculine sun fire herb. The purge aspect is great for purification, exorcism, curse breaking. The passion aspect, it's for love, especially ancestral love. I feel very connected to my ancestors through that herb. And what I would praise about that, the kind of energy that it holds, is health and physical strength. Cinnamon would be the next one that I would use, masculine sun fire, also a protection herb and a purification herb. Passion and lust. It's just really great for both of those things. The aspect of human healthy sexuality, that really plays a role, and that energy is really evident in cinnamon. I would use clove, masculine Jupiter fire. The purge aspect, great for exorcism, great for protection. The passion aspect, love again. The energy that I would praise with that one would be personal power and personal integrity. The list is kind of long. I don't know how many herbs she's interested in, but I'll say frankincense for purification, exorcism, protection, spirituality, and the divine masculine. Juniper berry, masculine sun fire, great for exorcism, curse breaking, and anti-theft. All about passion. The passion of it is love. I would praise male potency because it has it just that energy. It just, if you ever smell that, it just really has that energy to it. Patchouli, you got your feminine Saturn earth herb. Purge, great for getting rid of spiritual distractions, fear, and negative judgments. The passion, it brings in love, attraction, and lust. And for praise, it's celebrating the union of the spirit and the body. Black pepper, a masculine sun fire. We have exorcism and protection again. You see a theme going. Passion, it's personal authority. It's really, you know, kind of connecting with who you are on that authentic level, praise-wise, self-acceptance, and personal integrity. Peppermint, masculine, mercury, and fire, another purification, love, and the element of optimism comes out with peppermint. That's an energy that you can use to tap into that one. Rosemary, masculine, sun, fire. The purge element is purification and exorcism again. Lust is the passion aspect, and praise, youthfulness. It's just like a really fun, youthful quality that can, you can draw out through rosemary. Spearmint, we've got the feminine, Venus, water, removing inhibitions. Now this one, kind of where it steers a little bit different. I love this, I love that oil for like removing inhibitions and really kind of getting underneath, you know, passion-wise, right. Lust, praise, the self-expression. You know, if you really want to express yourself in a way that you're not used to, wonderful for that. And the last two are vetiver, feminine, Venus, earth. Purge-wise, you use it for hex-breaking. Passion-wise, love, attraction, and luck. The praise aspect, for me, is the grounding, centering, and the awareness that you get with vetiver. I love vetiver. It just takes me into, like, that trance so easy. It's one of my favorites. And the last one is ylang ylang. Purge-wise, it's releasing emotional trauma. The passion is freedom and joy, and the praise aspect would be libido. You know, if you want to get your horniness going, there you go. So hopefully that helps.
If you want to get your horniness going. You know, a lot, I was kind of a mixed feeling about Lupercalia, as some depictions of it really that I came across really kind of down in almost like this completely just absolutely debaucherous a festival, you know, where it was something that you, like, I don't know, more that you would expect for, I don't know, a celebration, you know, celebrating Bacchus or something. I don't know. Just, it was completely just.
Well, honestly, you know, I think
everybody
it can be that.
DTF.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's fine. I'm kind of, because I don't need to do all that. Like when I presented this before in one of my Facebook groups, they were just like, decluttering your house is like, I don't get it. You can be as debaucherous as you want to be. I just didn't need to take it that far. But if you want to, go ahead, you know? And on the February 14th, the Day of Passion, I do recommend people get outside their comfort zones. Like, if you want to visit a sex club for the first time, just, I mean, because you have to be sponsored and you have to know somebody. And like the one that I found in Nashville offers classes on what they do and how to get into it. So if that's something you're interested in, go for it. You know, get outside of your comfort zone. Kick off, like, who you were in the past. Like, the winter's over. Let's set that energy aside. You get to define who you are moving forward. And so the spring is a perfect time to decide, hey, this is something I want to grow within myself, like really explore my sensuality, really explore my sexuality.
Very interesting. And in the chat, Nagashima shares, you know, that a lot of it does seem, you know, to key to towards a celebration of for Pan. And he asked about the version that I presented about the completely debaucherous scene. Oddly enough, you know, that was coming from things like the History Channel. And those resources that you would kind of expect to, you know, the ones that say, or I guess it, I should say, put on the air of unbiased reporting.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't take much to scratch that surface to really get to understand. It has its own agenda.
Absolutely. Right? Now, in my practice, I don't work with deities actively. Like, if they come through, I honor them, but I don't go searching them out. But some of the characters and deities associated with Lupercalia would be, like I said, the twins, Romulus and Remus, the she-wolf. In another story, the she-wolf is actually the divine prostitute. So the kids were taken to a prostitute to be taken care of because, of course, back then they would have had a lot of children running around. The kids would have been able to blend in and nobody would know and they wouldn't be hurt. Lupercus, Februus, Pan, Faunus, Juno, and Rumina. And she was a new one for me, the goddess of breastfeeding. So she kind of comes up and is associated with Lupercalia too. So, I mean, if you wanted to work with those energies, they are there. If you wanted to get very carnal about it, I mean, you can get your pan on. The only reason I personally shy away from those is because some of the mythologies around those can be triggering for some people. And I'm all about stepping into your own power, not trying to pull it from the divine or make the divine do something. That's just not where my spirituality is. But yeah, they're there if you want to work with them.
It's actually a very interesting way of putting that. You know, because there's a lot of groups and such that, you know, that are very much different, you know, deity oriented or very focused on this, that, or the other, very specific way of practicing, that it's very much exclusionary for a lot of people. And in this day and age, we have so much information at our fingertips. We have so many options for, you know, what we want to do with our lives, how we want to proceed, you know, how we want to portray ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. In some ways, it kind of makes me a little nervous that, you know, not having that, like what you described, that openness to harness your own power mentality, grow in your power, I think kind of is almost going to relegate some of these other practices back into obscurity. You know, we talked about different groups resurrecting Lupercalia, you know, but Is there a point where, you know, somebody's going to take it too far and it becomes taboo and it's pushed away again?
The pendulum always swings one way and has to swing back the other. So, yeah, that's always going to happen. Deities for me, and this is a conversation that I like to have, but I think it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. So if you're new on this path or even if you've been on it for a long time, you have to deconstruct or indoctrinate yourself. And what I mean by that is I grew up in a very Christian household, nothing against Christianity. People love it. It's great for them. It just wasn't my thing. And so when I stepped out of that and I was like, oh, I'm going to be pagan. I'm going to live in a completely different way and worship in a completely different way. It actually took me several years to realize that all I did was take the Christian foundation, that framework, and just put paganism on top of it. You know, instead of Jesus, it was whatever deity I was working with at the time. Instead of I'm trying to get to heaven, I'm trying to get to enlightenment or the summer land. It's really hard to break that pattern, and you really have to notice when it's coming up for you. Actually, when I was meditating on, well, we'll talk about a little bit later, some of the things that you can create for Lupercalia. One of them is that I made this year was a garnet and halite necklace. And so I was meditating with it, and I was concentrating on the earth star chakra, your personal connection to Mother Earth, and my root chakra, because I wanted to build that. And the knowledge and kind of the awareness that came through for me was, you know how they always say, oh, you're a soul, you're the universe wanting to experience itself, which kind of plays into that whole dichotomy of there's a God out there and he created the soul and you're put on earth to have this experience and then you leave earth and go back to, and be with God, that whole framework that we're very comfortable with and kind of indoctrinated into. But when I was meditating on that, what I got was, I'm not the universe trying to experience itself, I'm Mother Earth experiencing herself. I'm here. There's so many ways that the earth manifests life, and all of them are valid, and all of them have their own experiences. So instead of me being this nebulous soul thing that came from a God out there, it's like, you're part of the earth. Really reconnect with that. Mother Earth is literally your mother. She gave birth to you, and eventually you will return to her, because the earth isn't forever. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, whether it's going to remain inhabitable for us, but even after we're gone, the earth will still be here, but it won't be here forever. Eventually, our sun is going to go supernova and destroy the solar system, you know, millions and billions of years from now. But if the earth is a consciousness and aware of that, maybe, you know, all of the life that she has brought forth in this beautiful way is for her to experience herself in the most diverse, the most meaningful, the most organic and dynamic way that she can before her time ends. And so for me, that was very humbling and also very reassuring when I had that kind of just epiphany.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, I really wanted to get your take on my research and looking into Lupercalia. Some scholars really seem to put out there that it was almost a festival for the sake of having a festival, and no one really knew who they were celebrating or what. What are your thoughts on that?
My first thought is it lasted for so many years, and I mean, you can look at festivals today. People celebrate for their own reasons. I think it's comfortable to have like a specific, hey, we're meeting for this reason, but at the end of the day, everybody comes to the door for their own reasons. And so that's why there's so many different gods kind of listed as, oh, they were celebrating Pan. No, they were celebrating Faunus. You know, and it might be a regional thing too. Over here in this region, that might have been Pan. Over there, it might have been more about Rumina. You don't know. And for me, why get caught up in that? Like, they were doing what they needed to in that time period. We need to do what we need to for this time period. And I think the fact that we are all, well, one, hardly anybody does spiritual cleansing the way that they need to. That's definitely something that we need to bring back. Two, you know, sexuality and like sexual expression has just been demonized and twisted and made into what it shouldn't be. You know, it's not a healthy expression the way it and natural the way that it is really meant to be. I mean, it's one of the core things humans need. We need to breathe, we need to eat, we need to drink, we need to have sex and procreate and do all that good stuff. So just for me, Lupercalia is all about reconnecting almost with the primal animal self, because we, especially in this society, are way too stuck in our heads. And we can create a lot of fantasies and a lot of illusions and a lot of crazy when we're that disconnected. It's about getting back into nature. It's about reconnecting with the animal part of our nature because, I mean, we are. We are animals. We have a higher intelligence, yes, and hopefully we have a soul too, and depending on what you believe, but we are all those things. And for me, Lupercalia is like, let's bring it back to the basics. It's the beginning of the year. Let's bring it back to the basics, and then we can expand and grow and evolve and become enlightened from there.
The celebration of the reconnecting to the foundations of who we are.
Absolutely.
Very cool. I've been thinking about this myself, and I find it's very interesting to me that Lupercalia was definitely a festival celebrated like in Italy, and that sort of Mediterranean
mm-hmm.
region.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it intriguing that it, in and of itself, didn't really kind of spread into, you know, the other parts of Europe in a way, in a meaningful enough way that I've been able to draw two parallels together,
mm-hmm.
or two lines together on these things. You know, because in the neo-pagan world, it seems, you know, things are very Nordic dominated. Things can be very seemingly Celtic dominated. And these
mm-hmm.
are a lot of the references that you see, you know, in pop culture, in fiction, and all of these other avenues. There's not a lot outside of the, you know, you do hear about the Greek gods and the Roman gods, which are, you know, two sides of the same coin in part.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear much about the festivals of the Mediterranean. And
right.
do you have a thought on why that is?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I don't know if it's because, like, over here, I don't work in publishing, but just things that I've heard, different publishing houses have their own specific agendas. And whoever's running that publishing house is going to produce books that align with, you know, their philosophy. And that might not be like a negative agenda. I'm not saying anything like that. It's just like it's what they know, so that's what they're going to popularize. And so the whole Celtic thing, the whole Nordic thing, I mean, it's super, for the lack of a better word, trendy to go that direction. I mean, there's plenty of information on it, like you said, but there are so many like niche and rich cultural things that you can explore. So that's one of the reasons why I gravitated towards this celebration. You know, it was different. Something in it rang true. So that's just where I put my focus.
Cruising into the last half or the last third of the show here, and I definitely want to make sure that we, you know, kind of get a no pun intended, holistic picture. Because I know in our discussions we've been kind of talking about how that you're really trying to share the history of Lupercalia, trying to kind of reignite a bit of that, the spotlight onto this specific holiday. And I know we've already talked about too how you break it down into, you know, over the course of those 3 days, into the different aspects. And in your estimation, though, for someone who is looking to either introduce this to a group that they belong to, or even as a solo practitioner, how would you recommend really kind of diving in, celebrating the essence of Lupercalia?
Mm. So basically what I did, like I said, I split it up into those 3 days with the purge, passion, and praise. If I wanted to, and I've done this with my group, it's not so much about Lupercalia, like I need to bring Lupercalia back. I need to bring awareness to the cycles and the energies that Lupercalia represents. So it's okay if you don't call it that. Like, and I might end up saying something different, you know, because I don't want to culturally appropriate Lupercalia, but it's the thing that sparked me. So the way I would do it, like I kind of touched on before, is from the 1st to the 12th, I'm doing my spiritual purifications. I'm physically cleaning my home. I'm spiritually cleaning my home, my property, my vehicle, and any businesses that I frequent. You know, let's get all that stagnant negative energy that might have accumulated out and have all that done by the 13th. On the 13th is when you do your big spiritual cleanse. And so since in the myth, milk was used to purify the Lupercalia priests, I'd say take a milk bath. Use any of the herbs that you're intuitively called to, mix them into the milk. You know, you take your regular shower, clean off like you normally would, then pour that milk over you and sit in that meditative state and draw in the energies of that purification and that, like the exorcism oils and all the other attributes that those oils kind of embody, and say, this is how I want to move forward. This is the energy that I want to move forward and express, you know, in the coming year. And then you rinse yourself off. For the next day, the 14th, passion, like I said, explore things that kind of scare you. If you want to take the debaucherous route, go out there and do those things, you know, in a safe way. I mean, you're not doing anything illegal, but get out of your comfort zone. What are you passionate about? And it doesn't have to be sex related either. Like if you just wanted to take that pottery class, or you just wanted to jump in your car and drive until you stop, you know, you just decide, I just want to go. Let yourself get out of your comfort zone. That's kind of the biggest takeaway that I get from Lupercalia. It's about living life to the fullest while we are here. And then you end it on the 15th day with your big feast. I'm organizing a huge feast where my local group is going to get together. And because in the myth, you know, you have the baskets, what we're going to do is donate all the things, you know, that we've cleaned, that we're going to purge and that just need to be rehomed. We're going to have a huge Lupercalia basket, and everybody can, kind of like Dirty Santa, pick out of the basket what they need, what's going to help them move forward in their new year. Right. We're also, just keeping with the color, everybody's coming dressed in red and white, so I'm getting my outfit together for that. But, yeah, just use the time. Instead of it being thinking about it as I'm trying to bring something from the past into the future, reshape it as I'm creating something that is meaningful in the present time that I can take into the future. Let the past inform you, but create it in the present so that you can have something wonderful for the future.
Actually, a really good kind of a formula there. And I really, I like what you said about the passion portion of it. And I think there's something that can be said there in that a lot of people, you know, really, they hold themselves back. In some of the most obscure ways. And mm-hmm. You don't think of things like you said, you know, getting in your car and just driving as something that kind of unleashes a passion. Getting out of your comfort zones, doing these things that, you know, you might not have allowed yourself to indulge in. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be, you know, even trying new foods or, you know.
Yes.
Like for
yes.
myself, you know, I'm
all of it.
I have a very strong passion for wanting to travel to foreign countries. However, I've very much stayed within my comfort zone, and I'll admit this, because I'm afraid of communications barriers. So, you know, you've ideas, because traveling is a passion of mine. I love to travel. I mean, you've seen how often we show up in Nashville.
Do it. So there are plenty of foreign places that speak English. Don't let that hold you back.
But really, there's a level of kind of a creativity to this, of, you know, adopting these, you know, how do I want to put it, paying tribute to the festival of Lupercalia, kind of staying true to form without doing that, the cultural appropriation, like you had called out. Yeah. It was just kind of funny, because the whole time you're sitting there talking, you were talking about getting out of your comfort zone. The spirit's just sitting here showing me like images of me like holding a tarantula, which would be so far out of my comfort zone that no one will fully understand just how far out of my comfort zone that would be. But, you know, things like that are interesting to me. I actually am very much intrigued by biology and the sciences. But, you know, there's ways to celebrate, but also to celebrate within your means, which I think is important for people to kind of think about, too. You know, you talked about throwing a feast. If you're part of a group, it's great. You know, everybody can bring a portion of it, and the revelry can be had by all. But even if you're in and doing this by yourself, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have like 40 dishes spread out across your kitchen cupboards and
exactly.
Do all this crazy stuff, you know. Instead of buying the chuck roast, buy the top sirloin. You know, treat yourself.
Yes, treat yourself. Exactly. Praise yourself. Be passionate about yourself and purge yourself.
Reverend James says, "Watch some Parks and Rec." Love that show. You know, Hey Maganda actually commented in the chat, you know, that it's permission to be your authentic self.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
This really is a very trying time in world history where, you know, some people are extolled for being their authentic selves, and we, you know, euphemistically call them influencers. And then others are beaten down for being their authentic selves. You know, and there's a lot we could go into a huge sociological discussion about this, but, you know,
yes.
Having this opportunity to grant yourself that permission, be your authentic self, and, you know, celebrate without harming others is really a phenomenal way to really kind of kickstart the year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We were just talking about how hard it is and how you're expected to be your most authentic self as a yoga teacher. And for me, like, I feel like I really get to do it. Like, the people who come to me are coming for me, you know. I'm not Instagram ready. I don't have the expensive clothes. That's not what my practice is about. But it is important to realize, you know, people see you through their own filter. So you can be your most authentic self and always try to be your most authentic self, but people will still only ever see you through that filter. So it's more important that you practice your own authenticity in your own way, because it really doesn't matter how other people perceive it.
It's very true. He began to add, you know, that think if you are your authentic self, it shows others they can be their authentic selves too.
Absolutely.
Now that ripple effect is no joke.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're, you know, in energy work and things of that nature. If you're in tune, it's that ripple effect is just augmented. So much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the words get in the way, unfortunately. I mean, we have to put all these labels on things to try to explain them, but then people get caught up in the labels and miss the energy underneath. You know, there are just things that are universal to everybody. Why are we fighting about it? Our needs are almost basically the same across the board. Just divide up the resources and get people what they need. Let people express themselves in the way that's most appropriate for them. It doesn't take anything away from you, from me. I don't have to understand it. As long as you ain't hurt nobody, do what you need to do.
You know, and that is a framework that I really, really wish you need to put that one out on social media. That's a call out right there. But that's a framework that I really wish a lot of people would understand and follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I know we could wax philosophical on this for hours, I'm sure. But it really comes down to that respect for your fellow man. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you're not messing with me, I ain't got a problem with you, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And who knows, you know, might be something. That's kind of a little bit of what's intriguing me with Lupercalia in this kind of celebratory period, you know, get rid of the old, make way for something new. But you don't really know what that, you know, and a lot of times people are like anticipatory of what's coming. It's like, oh, I'm going to clean out the garage so I can get a new car or something, you know, not to be too muggle about
mm-hmm.
it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, with this festival, it also kind of speaks to just being open to whatever. It's like chaos theory. It's like, who knows what the heck's coming? But we're gonna rock it one way or another.
Enjoy the
and
ride.
That's a level of it's a level of freedom and a level of kind of what's the word? I'm stumbling on my words tonight. It allows you to experience life in a whole, almost a whole different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not really going outside of your comfort zones. And it's actually a meme that I share fairly regularly. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that. It's like GIF and JIF. Who cares? You know, I share it quite often. It says nothing good comes from comfort zones, or, you know, nothing ever grows from comfort zones.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're meant to rest,
when we push ourselves, you know, when we push ourselves just a little bit outside of those, it'd be amazing. Everyone would be amazed to see really what you are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of almost brings me to feeling that that's true. You know, we the pastoral foundations, the celebration of, you know, protection, fertility, purification, etc. But I think there is that aspect of growth in framework that hasn't been called out as much in the research as, I don't know, to me it just seems very evident that it's there. I might be wrong. Call me out on if I am. I'm more than, I could take it.
No, right? No, I feel like you're on something. You're definitely on something right there. So trying to segue into that, one of the things that I love to do for Lupercalia to kind of set the tone is to do a divination. Like, what is the energies that I'm working with? And so I can share that with you guys if you want to do it at home for yourself. Let me find it.
That would be awesome.
All right. So my Lupercalia divination is, number one, what is the she-wolf's message? And think of the she-wolf as kind of that aspect of your higher self that's nurturing, but not in the way, but without all the limitations of a physical mother. You know, somebody who's watching out for you but doesn't have those traditional hang-ups, especially since this is a very sex-heavy festival celebration. So the she was the surrogate mother, not the actual mother. So it makes it a little easier for people to wrap their heads around. Number two, what do I need to purge from my life? Number three, what do I need to be more passionate about? Number four, what do I need to praise more? And that one can be interesting because there can be aspects of yourself that you are keeping in shadow that you need to be bringing to the forefront and praising. And so it might not be something external, or it could be something external. Maybe you're so focused on yourself and your own growth that you aren't paying attention to all the people who have supported you along the way. So really pay attention to number four, what you need to be praising. Number five, how do I explore love more authentically? And, of course, number six is how do I explore my sexuality more authentically? Number seven, in what aspects of my life do I need to be more creative? Because it's a fertility festival, but fertility is not just having babies. Like, what can you give birth to? What ideas, what projects going forward? Think of it in those terms as well. And number eight, of course, how do I lighten up and laugh more? Things are very serious right now, and there's a lot going on, and you need that break. So ask, how can you lighten up and laugh more?
Do you have that written down? Maybe you can share it with me.
I do, and it's in the group. So, yeah, but I can tag you.
Please do. Maybe I'd love to get that into the chat and share it with everybody here tonight.
Okay. Tonight? Okay.
I'm very amused that at the how can I laugh more, step eight.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, gets me in so much trouble. Because if things are, you know, for me, there's always something that can be found to be humorous in just about any given situation. You know, whether
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, gut laugh, ha ha, funny, or ironic, haha, funny, or just something, you know, that's really effed up and chuckle about it because otherwise,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're going to lose it. But I think you're in so much trouble.
Hey, laughter yoga is a thing. Maybe that needs to be the first yoga that you experience. Oh, now,
you know
that I have a list of stones that you can play with too, if you want that list.
Of course.
There's no way I could come on here and not talk about crystals. So I broke them up. So let's start with the red crystals. Red garnet is the one that really just kind of exemplifies Lupercalia for me. Real quickly, alleviates emotional disharmony, eliminates inhibitions and taboos. Exorcism, drives off phantoms and demons. Protection, warns of danger, it draws harm to your enemies. It's energizing. It boosts your self-confidence. It helps you with courage and hope, love and devotion. It's good luck. It also kind of sharpens your survival instincts. It balances your sex drive. It helps a controlled rise of the Kundalini. And it helps in attracting a compatible partner for sexual healing. I mean, for me, garnet, if you don't have any others, just do the garnet. The garnet will get you there. The other red stone, carnelian, restores vitality and motivation, courage, promotes positive life choices, dispels apathy, helps you in overcoming abuse, helps you to trust in yourself and your perceptions, helps in overcoming negative conditioning, helps you to be more steadfast. It helps daydreamers to focus more. It dispels a mental lethargy. It's a protector against envy, rage, and resentment. It calms negativity and replaces it with love for life, activates the root chakra, increases fertility, and heals sexual dysfunction. That's carnelian. Last redstone is red calcite. It's an energy amplifier and cleanser. It cleanses the environment. It speeds up development and growth. It promotes emotional intelligence, combats laziness by energizing you on every level, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Enhances your trust in yourself. That's calcite in general. Specific red calcite will also uplift your emotions, aids in building your willpower. It removes stagnant energy and helps dissolve blockages. The white stones that you could play with, selenite. Selenite is amazing for purification. It's my number one stone for purification. It creates a powerful, peaceful environment. It detaches entities from the aura. It protects your mind from external influence, and it disperses and stabilizes erratic emotions. The next white stone would be milk or snow quartz. It helps you in letting go of overwhelming responsibilities. Connects you to your inner wisdom, denied by yourself and society. And I think that one's really important because there's so much garbage and layers that are put on us. I think snow quartz is really good for that. And the next one, it's a white stone, but sometimes it comes in pink hues. It's called danbarite. It facilitates deep change and leaving the past behind. It starts off the soul off in a new direction. It helps clarify the aura, and it promotes ease and helps you get out of stuck attitudes. Danbarite's a really high vibration stone. It's more around the crown chakra more than, say, the root chakra. But for me, those two are, in my practice, those two are the same chakras. They're just different sides of the same coin. So having something that pairs them is really, really effective. You've got your rose quartz. So we're going to start with the pink stones. Self-love. It is the self-love stone. And it's an important stone for heart chakra purification. It attracts loving relationships, wonderful for empathy and increasing your sensitivity, helps you release unexpressed emotions, transmutes unhealthy emotional conditioning. It allows you to receive love, especially if you're not used to it. If you've been in situations where you were kind of denied your emotional support and receiving love, it really helps kind of bridge that gap for you. It also helps with self-forgiveness, self-acceptance, self-trust, self-worth, and increases your fertility. The next pink stone is mangano calcite. For me, it's the empathy stone. I love this stone for that. Increases your self-worth, self-acceptance, eases tension and anxieties. Getting out of our comfort zone, grab that piece of mangano calcite, and it'll help you ease into it a little bit better. It gently dissolves resistance and helps support people suffering from trauma or assault. Rhodochrosite, another super powerful one. It helps you with selfless love and compassion to kind of express those
those things. It's excellent for those who feel unloved. It supports you in healing from sexual abuse. It helps you assimilate painful feelings without shutting down or denying the experience. It clears the solar plexus and root chakras. So this is one of the few ones that really gets up into that solar plexus. Gently brings up repressed feelings to be acknowledged and released. It helps you identify ongoing and face uncomfortable truths with love and kindness. When we're doing our shadow work, that's a good one to kind of hold on to because, you know, those harsh emotions can really throw you for a loop. And also, it encourages spontaneous expression of passion and erotic urges. I wanted to throw one more pink stone on there because I love this stone. It's wonderful for shadow work. Rhodonite, you can find it in pink, pink and black, or even some hints of gold. And for me, I use it to balance masculine and feminine energies. It helps you align you with your greatest potential because you are directly working with the shadow, and that holds all your magic, basically. It's all the stuff that you've shut off. If you really learned how to tap into that shadow, the black represents your shadow self, the pink represents your inner child, and those few that you can find with the gold can represent your higher self. And lastly, for me, this is like honorary mention. If you don't have any other stone, get one of these because I've been absolutely adoring working with it. It's called a Shiva Lingam. It awakens your sacred slumbering life force energy. It awakens all the major energy chakras in your body. And most importantly, in my practice, it balances all the masculine and feminine energies and brings them all into harmony. Like that's just a go-to for me now. So that's the list.
Excellent list. Excellent list. And if you have that list actually in that I could maybe copy and paste into the chat, several people are really looking forward to that list. If not, we can share out maybe on the Mystic Spaces Magical Places Facebook page. But we are coming up on the end of the show. We've run out of time as usual. So that's all the time we have for tonight. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we meet, keep the magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Ayajani Matthew Vaughn of Bowling Green, Kentucky, for joining us this week. Next week, don't miss Reading Palooza 3, just in time for Valentine's Day. Why? Because we love our loyal listeners. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.org, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And yes, next week, Reading Palooza 3. Stay tuned this week. We'll announce out some names for who's going to be joining us.